Thank you for downloading the podcast of the Virginia Biotechnology Association. This edition of the Virginia Bioscience Podcast features Michael Grisham, the president and CEO of two biotechnology companies at the Virginia Biotechnology Research Park in Richmond, Virginia. Grisham announced in September 2006 that Living Microsystems had received $18 million in venture investment for their second round of financing. The company has 16 employees and is focused on clinical trials for its technology utilizing less invasive blood tests for early detection of Down syndrome and other genetic abnormalities. At the same time, Grisham secured $8 million in his first round for his second company, CellPoint Diagnostics, an 8-employee company working on a diagnostic tool for early detection of cancerous cells. This is Mark Herzog, the Executive Director of the Virginia Biotechnology Association, and I'm pleased to have with me Mike Grisham, who's the CEO of Living Microsystems and CellPoint Diagnostics, two biotechnology companies located at the Virginia Biotechnology Research Park in Richmond, Virginia. Mike, it's great to have you here with us.
Pleased to be here.
If you could start perhaps by telling us a little bit about your background and how it came to be that you became the CEO of these two companies here in Richmond.
Well, very early on, high school, college, et cetera, I've always been drawn to the opportunity to work with high-performance, high-talented people. When you can share goals with them, you can achieve a lot more than anybody could ever do individually. So I, in college, pursued a major in human motivation and social behavior. It's a liberal arts program out of the University of California at Berkeley, with the idea I'd work for a couple years and then go on to business school. And I highly recommend people to go work a couple years before pursuing a business master's degree. I then went on to Stanford to get my MBA, and there I was very fortunate to get introduced to the venture capital community. Some of the leading venture capitalists came in and taught courses in new enterprise and small business, and then would bring in the top-tier law firms, CEOs, investment bankers, to really give you a sense for the infrastructure required to really build a substantial company. And I was quite impressed with the fact that a small startup company can attract and build a management team stronger and with more experience and depth than many Fortune 500 companies can ever put into any one division. And the idea that you could attract this talent and give them ownership in the company, real equity for capital gain, that you could bring in top-tier public accounting firms, law firms, intellectual property firms, and have them subsidize their rates, all to provide an environment where, not burning a lot of capital, you can hit major milestones and move it forward, I found extraordinarily attractive. And then to get really smart people who were providing the capital and got on your side of the table to help build and grow the company, I was just a natural. I didn't want to be a consultant. I didn't want to work for McKinsey or Booz Allen. I wanted to build and grow companies.
And did you have any idea what area you'd be going into? Was sciences ever even on the radar screen at that time? Or?
Actually, science was not on the radar screen. The first companies I got involved with in was a polymer technology out of Raychem that we use for alternative energy applications, low temperature. What I was really looking for was market opportunities that I thought made a difference in society. It's something that would motivate me and help me attract other people who would want to go solve that problem. The other thing I was looking for is a company could dominate its market. It could be number one. You never want to play a game where you're third or fourth, maybe number two catching number one. And I wanted very top-tier management that I could learn from. And I think out of that, you get the ingredients of a team, capital, focus, and then move on execution to win. And whether it was in biotechnology, healthcare services, where I spent a lot of my career, or IT, I think those are the key ingredients in any enterprise.
So it sounds like you had a great educational experience in California. What brought you across the continent to Virginia?
Well, I've I had the opportunity to build four venture-backed companies. One we did an IPO with, where I was the senior VP of sales and marketing. And then I was CEO of a healthcare services company that focused on traumatic and catastrophic medical events. It was a service company backed by a couple of the very top-tier venture capitalists on the West Coast. We got that company up to about $300 million in revenue and it was time to do something new. And my wife said, let's do the next company on the East Coast. We had friends and family here in Virginia, and so I was very fortunate to get hooked up with the biotechnology park here in Richmond, which introduced me to the tech transfer office, got me excited about getting intellectual property out of the academic world that could be commercialized. They introduced me to some of the angel and venture capital people. Jim Fahrenholt over at Tall Oaks was a very significant contributor to our ideas, our business plan, and provided seed capital for both companies. Your question about biotechnology, one of the members of my scientific advisory board on the healthcare services, Dr. Ron Tompkins, who's chief of staff over at Mass General's Shriners Burn Hospital and is department of surgery there at Harvard, introduced me to some technologies that had been incubated through NIH funding. And the thing that particularly got my attention was a technology that Dr. Mehmet Toner, who's a professor of bioengineering there at Harvard, had on having living cells on microchips. And I thought, wow, what a fabulous technology that could really impact a lot of key markets. But a key thing about me is I'm not smart enough to do platform technologies, and this is a rare cell detection technology. And I just don't know how to tell an engineer or scientist what technology should be invested in or not. Again, I'm just not that smart. So what I count on is the customer. So I really believe in vertical market applications and vertical companies as opposed to platform technologies. And this technology had great promise in saving a lot of lives and moving forward in the area of prenatal chromosomal abnormalities, and specifically getting a non-invasive test that would spare women the pain and actually the miscarriages caused by invasive procedures like amniocentesis or chorionic villus sampling. Thought this technology might apply very well there. And again, it's a case of building a high-performance team, getting people who've all done it before, and working on both the science and the market hand-in-hand.
That's very impressive, and if that weren't enough, you decide also to start another company as well, CellPoint Diagnostics.
Well, again, I think these companies require focus, focus, focus. So we actually worked at Living for 4 years, really perfecting the technology and developing our regulatory strategy, reimbursement strategy, and developing relationships within the industry and with ACOG. But we were serendipitously approached by Mass General and the Cancer Center there. They had discovered the mutation in non-small cell lung cancer, the EGFR mutation, and said, gee, we can't keep going in and doing needle biopsies. Can this technology get circulating tumor cells? And so that forced us to look prematurely over when I would have wanted to about cancer, and specifically the impact that circulating tumor cells can have on monitoring therapy or selecting therapy. It fit right in our overall global mission of getting people better. But again, consistent with a vertical market, I believe you need totally separate teams, totally dedicated to solving that problem. So we basically raised a small $1.8 million of seed capital with the idea of killing the opportunity, i.e., one, can you really get the cells? Two, is there a market? Can you get reimbursed? Is there a regulatory pathway? And any one of those could have come up no, and we could have said, fine, let's get back and focus totally on Living.
But it worked, huh?
All the boxes got checked, and so we've built a separate management team, a separate scientific team, and funded as a separate company so we could have that discipline of focus.
Well, you've just had some great news recently. It sounds like Living Microsystems is now up to 16 employees. You've just raised $18 million in your second round of financing. CellPoint Diagnostics, the other company you mentioned, has just received $8.5 million in its first round of funding, and that company's up to about 8 employees now. Sounds like you're really on a roll.
Well, it's a team effort in every way. I first got to say that getting the right investor partners have been just crucial, and more David Dow Ventures, and specifically Bill Erickson, was very enamored with our technology and has kind of rolled up his sleeves and worked right with us hand in hand in both companies. I'm very pleased that Alloy Ventures just joined us with Mike Hunkapiller joining the board at Living Microsystems and being able to move into the molecular non-fish-based assays. And but right now, the real work is ahead of us. All the capital does is give you the runway where now you got to go execute, and this is very much an execution play.
So, Mike, if you could tell us now a little bit about what are the key things as a biotech entrepreneur that keep you up at night, things you're worried about. If there were a couple of different areas that get more of your attention than others, what would those be?
Well, I think in biotechnology, it's just an extraordinary rich area for making a big difference and building big companies. But it really, to build the company, it's all about risk reduction. It's really removing the variables that will impair or prevent you from achieving the goals. So the major things that I start with is, boy, first of all, be close to the customer. Really, what do they need? What do they want? Make sure you're listening very tightly. The next thing you got that I worry about a ton is getting the right people and keeping the right people and have us all working together and not having daylight moving between us and what we're trying to achieve. And these companies require interdisciplinary teams, people with different domain expertise. And so I just spend a lot of time trying to find people who've all done it before successfully and put the management focus on really becoming a high-performance team. The three other areas that then keep me awake is intellectual property and competition, i.e. do we have major barriers to entry that allow us to achieve the margins that we need to build the company, and do we have freedom to operate? So IP is just crucial, and it's a cornerstone. And when you have those three, you then get to worry about the next big problem, which is capital and getting the right investor partners that share the same vision and same goals that you and your management team have. And then the last issue is just making sure you got really great communications with your board and board community. The one thing that I would focus in on for us that was very crucial early on is intellectual property. There were some key pieces of intellectual property that lived at three or four major academic institutions. And when we first approached one of those offices, we got relegated to mid-level folks who wanted, they didn't have a lot of the experience of what it takes to build a company. And so consequently, the negotiations were all about five-year business plans and detailed regulatory strategies and the type of clinical trial. And the first thing you got to do is get a proof of concept.
Right.
And you've got to secure the technology and get a right to that. So it's just, it's a make or break situation. Fortunately, we were able to go to another senior leading academic institution and secure IP there and then go back to the first institution and use that template and that credibility. So my message there is, one, do a detailed freedom to operate, get the core pieces of IP, and work in a collaborative way with the academic institutions, letting them know that you share their goal for commercialization and that you're wanting them to get rewarded for the energy and efforts they put through, but they've got to work with you on the milestones, on the timing, and to defray upfront capital so that they get downstream royalty or capital gain. And again, it's alignment of incentives, and it applies in all these areas, but in IP acquisition, I would just share that one story of making sure you bundle it. If you get shut out of one door, find another door to go through or over or around.
Well, Mike, can you tell us a little bit about, if we were to have this interview again 3 years from now, where you would like to see Living Microsystems and CellPoint be at that point?
Well, again, what brought us together and caused us to form the company is our vision of getting people better and to address really major markets. And for Living Microsystems, it's really to have a non-invasive prenatal test that would be the standard of care for all pregnant women. That equates to currently about a $2 billion annual recurring revenue. It can save a lot of lives, improve health, and so I look forward to sitting down in about 3 years and showing that we're on a trajectory to be the standard of care for all pregnant women.
All right, Mike. Well, thanks so much for your time. And I also want to thank all of those who have listened to this podcast. I know that, Mike, you're You're a busy fellow, and we appreciate your time and willingness to participate.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of the Virginia Biotechnology Association. For more information, please visit us on the web at www.vabio.org.